Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, firmly ensconced in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Those are words that have not come out of my mouth in quite some time. Glad you're with us tonight. Big show planned. It is always more fun when you get involved, of course. 312-981-7200. That's the number. When you call, you'll be talking to Cody. Hey, I'm no longer on Tinder Golf. He is the executive producer from Rockford, Illinois. If you're nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. You can also reach us, the text number, of course. That's the phone number, 312-981-7200. I'll repeat it ad nauseum. And you can get a hold of us on social media, because all the kids love social media, Facebook and Twitter. It's Brian Noonan Show. So there you go. We are fully accessible, even when we're not here. So we haven't talked on the air in a while. What's been going on? Anything new happening? Here's something about Russia, and there's some wiretaps, and there's all kind of things going on. And I heard Donald Trump is still president, which is exciting. So there's all sorts of things happening, and we are going to explore some of them tonight. Listen, I am after 6:30. We are going to delve into what could possibly be. I know everybody's talking about ties to Russia. I know everybody's talking about, oh, we've got perhaps there were wiretaps, but there's no evidence of why. We're talking about big stories. Talking about the TSA now being a little more intimate on their searches at the airport, giving you what amounts to a reach around at the airport without buying you dinner. It's horrifying. It's called, I think, the turnaround and cough method that they're doing with the new searches. So that's going up. People are talking about that. But listen, we have what could be the top political story of the year up to this point. I know it's only March, but this is big. Big, big, big. It's something that's been plaguing me for a couple of months, quite frankly, since President Trump was inaugurated. This has come to light. So we'll be delving into that after 6:30.
Is it tremendous?
It's huge.
It's huge?
A huge story.
Is this a Brian Noonan show exclusive?
Wow. Well, probably because none of the other fake news outlets would cover it. So I would, sure, yeah, of course. It's mainstream media going out on a limb, but I'm going to name the sources of my story. There's no unnamed sources here. There's no leaks. There's published reports.
Wow.
Just going to get into it. We're going to find out your thoughts on it as well. But listen, we have a much bigger story. Bigger even than the fact that the Dirty Wellies are coming in after 7 o'clock, along with our good friends from the Irish American Heritage Center to talk about St. Patrick's Day.
Nice plug, Brian.
Thank you. I may not have been here a while, but don't think I haven't been doing fake shows in my basement. So I'm still up on the formatics. I'm like Rupert Pupkin, the king of comedy. I have created a facsimile of this board in my basement. And while other people are sitting around doing God knows what in their basements, I am practicing radio. So I am the king of radio. I sit in the basement. I do fake shows. I have a fake Cody. I have a fake Roger. I actually use my dog as Roger. Just jumps around, gets all excited, runs in, pees on things. That's what I do. So I have a Roger. I have a Cody. And I have the fake board. And then I'll take, I have my wife shoot me horrible texts from upstairs. And so it's just like being here, except I'm in the basement. But while we were gone, and I know some of you may or may not have heard this, because Cody, our own Cody, got to be a radio host. This was very exciting, but this is not the big news. I'm burying the lead, as they say in other, fake media.
Wow.
I buried the lead. But it all ties in, because some of this news leaked out when Cody was hosting our old time slot. Currently, Matt Bubala's time slot, Saturday morning from 2 until 5. He hosted it with Craig Collins, who you may know from various roles here, and now he's on pretty much every podcast. Doesn't he?
Big podcast guy.
Yeah, he helps with all the podcasts. So anyway, Cody and Craig hosted a show. And from all reports, of course, I was asleep, because the only reason I stay up to that hour is back in the day when I was drinking or when I was getting paid to stay up that late. Other than that, I'm an old man and I'm in bed. Let's be honest. But I've listened to some of the audio on WGNradio.com, and it was, you guys did a nice job.
Well, thank you.
But the big news, and Roger was part of this, Roger heard the big news when it happened, let's not bury the lead anymore. Cody got engaged. That is very, very exciting. It's, I can't believe it. After all these years of you talking about what a gift to women you were, and how women found you unbelievably attractive, mm-hmm. and every woman wanted you. Now you have decided to settle down with one woman for the rest of your life, or however many years she decides to put up with you.
All those things are true that you said.
So first of all, congratulations.
Thank
you. This is very, very exciting. And this is the girl you've been dating for a while, correct? This is not some mail-order bride. This is nothing untoward. It's not a shotgun wedding. This is a pure act of love.
She's not pixelated.
No.
She is not a wireframe. She's not a video game.
She's an actual... I've met her. She's an actual woman.
Flesh
Just like
blood.
Pinocchio, I'm a real boy. She's a real woman.
Mm-hmm.
You're marrying a real woman.
A real human woman. Who would have thunk it?
I don't know. Was there a chance we're going to marry a fake human woman?
I don't know. Maybe.
Like from
news?
Westworld?
Could be fake news.
Yeah, it's all fake news. This whole thing is fake news.
No, she's great. We've been dating a little over 2 years, and I'm extremely excited.
You should be. Now, was this... did you come to this decision on your own, or were you not to say when I say pressured into it, that has negative connotations, but was there a little, hey, are we gonna poop or get off the pot?
Nah, we've been talking about it for a while.
Okay.
We talked about it early. I still insist it was love at pretty much first sight.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty much. I knew very early on she was something extra special.
And what were her characteristics that made her stand out in your mind?
This is going to sound maybe weird.
It is. I can't wait to hear it.
We were sitting around my apartment talking for a couple hours, few hours, or something like that. And I... Oh, this is not that sexy.
Oh. Darn it. Don't play it anyway.
Darn it. We'll play it anyway.
All right.
It's the sexiest song I have.
Is it?
Or the most loving song.
Well,
I could play this one instead.
Do we...
Is this better?
Juice?
Yeah. Does that fit the story more than Let's Get It On?
Sitting around getting high, man.
Of
no, that's not. No.
All right, so you were sitting around. You had first met. You had been together, what, 12 hours, a week and a half?
Yeah, we weren't even together. We were just kind of hanging out for a couple weeks.
Were you Netflixing and chilling?
Something like that.
All right.
And we...
That's what the kids do, right? You Netflix and chill.
We were chatting, and I thought to myself, I am not even a little bored. And most of the girls I dated in my lifetime, they're just a lot of times I just didn't care what they were talking about. So I don't know if I just reached a certain maturity in my age or if I was just dating boring girls, which I can't say because I dated a lot of interesting girls.
Sure.
But I just...
Yes, and we've been privy to a number of them.
You've known
of the stories of all
yes,
of them.
Yes, you've had to listen to a lot of my stories about them. But I don't know. I could spend a whole day with her and the entire time be engaged. I would get home from work and put my phone down, and maybe she'd come over, we'd watch a movie or something, and I wouldn't look at my phone. I wouldn't want to look at my phone. I'm a millennial, too.
We know.
I'd put my phone in my bedroom, and literally I would get text and reply 6 hours later, and my friends are like, what were you doing? And I'm with this girl, and I like hanging out with her, and I really like being with her, and it's still the same. I've redeveloped a couple old bad phone habits, kind of compulsively checking once in a while, but
sure.
But at home, I can put my phones away and just hang out with her, and I'm really very happy.
Good for you. Now, listen, we all have engagement stories of how we got engaged. I like your engagement story, so if you don't mind, we'll talk about that when we come back, and we'll open it up, 312-981-7200. We're celebrating love here in a nation divided. We're talking about two people coming together. Isn't that a bit? Wow. You'd think I'd wrote that down, but I did not. That just came right out of the top of my head. That was deep. But we'd like to hear your story. So you think you have a good engagement story, share with us. 312-981-7200. We are celebrating Cody getting engaged. That's wow. What will all the hearts are breaking throughout America and the imaginary dating sites that you frequented. There are no more. There are no longer plenty of fish in the sea.
I will say,
yes.
A lot of those likes on my Facebook update that I was engaged, most were for men.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the girls, they were just so heartbroken.
They were very heartbroken. I got private messages from a number of women saying, we thought we had a shot.
Mm.
And I said, well, I'm sorry. He's off the market officially. I'm going to go with that's your stance. You're off the market?
I would say that's pretty safe to say.
Listen, I don't know. I don't know how you millennials do it. Maybe you can Netflix and chill an entire other relationship.
I don't think the millennial I'm engaged to would prefer that.
No, I doubt it. She seems like she wouldn't put up with any of that. All right, so we'll talk about that and talk to you on the other side. It is WGN. Who is the latest victim of love? It's our own Cody Gauff, who is now engaged. Yes, ladies, he is off the market. Oh, no, what will you do? You'll have to scratch your Plenty of Fish profiles and all the other ones. What were some of the other sites that you used to frequent back in the day, years ago?
God, who knows? Plenty of Fish.
Plenty of Fish was the one I remember you years ago.
Hinge.
Were you ever a? I joked earlier about the what's the swiping one now? Tinder. Were you ever on Tinder?
Oh, I was on Tinder.
You're on Tinder.
Sadly,
so now no one can swipe you.
One of the worst.
Because someone already has.
Yes. Yeah, so no, God, we did not meet online.
No, I know you didn't meet, but she swiped your heart.
No, dating online is the nightmare that I will never have to relive.
Very nice. Well, people, as you can imagine, people very excited for you. From the 312, congrats, Cody. But you're setting the bar pretty low. I could just imagine the vows. Do you, Cody, promise to love, cherish, and not get bored with Mrs. Cody for at least 2 hours at a time, so help you God. Yeah, listen, I'm not going to put the kibosh on his joy. I think the fact that he's able, you don't know Cody as well as I do, the fact that he was able to put his phone down for hours at a time and just be lost with his lady, I think that's a pretty good indicator that there's interest there and things should be explored. So congratulations. In this realm of the superficial, remember this, Cody, how you've spent on her will only serve to ego boost her worst traits once married.
How much I've spent?
Yeah, how much have you spent? Listen, again, you don't know Cody very well. I know how much money. He hasn't spent money.
Yeah, I don't have much to spend.
All right, but listen, I loved your engagement story, and I thought I had a pretty good engagement story. If you have one, 312-981-7200, I'll thank you for this. I almost felt like a mafia don because you made sure that I knew before the word really leaked out too much, which was nice because you announced it. You announced it and talked about it a little bit while you were hosting, 2 to 5 that day. And you said, well, I get up early and there was a text that had come into my phone at like 6:15 or 6:30. With a picture of you and your fiance. Do we say her name or we don't?
Yeah, how does
that work? All right. Well, listen, I never have, and I don't want to be the guy who does it. So you and your fiance in the sight of your engagement, and you said, listen, the words started to leak out, but I wanted you to know. So that meant a lot to me. I was very excited. So tell us how you did it, because if people listened to the podcast where we discussed Valentine's Day, it was there was a lot of foreshadowing, but we didn't know it. You were being very cagey during the podcast. Because I was giving you a hard time for not doing more on Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, well, hang on, her birthday's coming up, and there'll be good stuff for her birthday.
Right.
So now what happened?
Her birthday is February 24th, so I did not do basically anything for Valentine's Day. I was very crappy, but I kept saying, the birthday is going to be big, trust me. So one of our favorite place, actually, I think our favorite place in Chicago is the Music Box Theater up on Southport. And shout out to them because they're awesome. You'll hear why. And we go there all the time for films. It's a great place. It's historical. She really likes history. We just really enjoy it. So I brought her to the Music Box. We had lunch next door. And then we went for a little walk after. Walked underneath, right in front of the theater. And I said, oh, I've got to get money from across the street at the bank. So we walked across the street, and then I said, hey, by the way, I've been meaning to ask you, did you see what's showing at the Music Box tonight? And she turns, and on the left side of the marquee, it said, Happy Birthday, Casey. And on the right side, it said, Will you marry me?
Bravo. Bravo.
People outside are clapping.
Yeah, people outside think it's great.
That's really sweet.
That's
Thank
terrific.
You.
It was beautiful.
And the best part was school was getting out. This was about 3 in the afternoon on a Friday.
Yeah.
I'd taken the day off. And a group of about a dozen 14-year-old girls walked up right as this was happening. And they look at the marquee, and they were like, oh, my gosh, that's so cute. That's so blah, blah, blah. And then they see my now fiancé, and they're like, is that you? Oh, my gosh. And they're all screaming, and they're all excited, which was great.
So
for
you
me.
Were hit with teenage girls, too.
Well, so I knew, oh, my gosh, this I did the right thing.
Sure, if you were marrying a teenage girl, I think you did the right thing marrying an adult woman, but, I wouldn't judge the response of teenage girls as the harbinger of or the arbiter of, oh, yeah, I did the right thing.
Their level of excitement, I think,
right.
showed some semblance of...
Well, they still believe in romance, and obviously you do as well.
I do as well.
Like a teenage girl.
I do.
Very nice.
I'm just like a teenage
girl.
So
did she immediately... Did it register right away? Did she say yes right away? Because that's what everybody always wants to know. Did they say yes?
I think it... Well, she said yes eventually. I think it registered after about 4 hours. And then...
It took her 4 hours to say yes?
No, she said yes before that, but it took her at least a couple minutes. She said, oh my God, over and over again.
Well, sure.
She just kept saying, oh my God, and then she cried, and then she'd look back, and then look at me, and then look back, and look at me, and say, oh my God, again, and then cry.
Now, at this point, is the ring on her finger?
So I pulled the ring out of my pocket. I said, by the way, I didn't wrap your birthday present. I'm not sure if you wanted it now or later. And I just pulled out the ring box.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to hit her all at once. She was clearly in shock from the marquee.
That's when you go in for the kill.
No,
I see if she drops right there.
I didn't want to bust out the ring because I thought her head would explode.
Okay.
So I waited a minute, and then after about a minute, I think I hugged her for a minute because she was still freaking out.
Well, sure.
And then I said, I did get you a ring, and then I showed it to her, and aww, she did a second round of freaking out. I think that's about
when the teenage girls still there when the ring came out? Had they been hanging around?
Actually, no. They showed up after I got the ring on her finger.
Oh, okay.
So it did happen a few minutes later. Actually, the first person to walk by was some woman that looks at us probably a minute after it happened, yeah, and said, is this her car? Do you need to move your car? Or something about a car?
Oh,
we didn't even process it.
Welcome to Chicago.
and
then she shot you.
We said no, and then she disappeared. And I don't know where she came from or what. But
the car police.
I guess. So, but yeah, then she eventually said yes, and then we went on our way. And it was.
Then we went on our way.
Then we went home.
Did you go over to the music box and tell them that you had, in fact, asked, and she did, in fact, say yes?
We stopped by, and the funny thing was their whole... It was right after the matinee had started.
Okay.
There was about five of them behind concessions, and the owner, the manager was there. They were all very nice, and
yeah,
he helped me set it up. So
that's very cool.
Thank you again in the Music Box Theater for that. And they had all been talking because they said, we saw you across the street. We figured it was you guys. But we were thinking, Chicago's a big city. What if somebody else named Casey was walking by with her boyfriend on her birthday?
Or even a guy named Casey.
Or a guy.
Could have been anybody named Casey.
Yeah.
Who was having a birthday and right on the precipice of getting engaged.
Yeah.
Could have thrown everybody for a loop.
It could have been rough, but they were very nice, and I told them, you know, you can change the marquee again. But
you got some nice pictures of it, which's a story for the ages. That's mm-hmm. very good.
I wanted it to be a Chicago kind of a landmark.
Yeah.
We can go there forever.
Right.
Hopefully they'll be around for a very,
and
very long time.
It will always be special.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
So every time we go back now,
look
you know,
you.
We'll... Yeah.
Roger, he's never... For 10 years, he's never put one iota of that type of planning into this show.
No.
And yet, for something life-changing, he does have the potential to come out of his shell and really do something.
You know,
so what does that tell us?
Well, the amount of planning he put into this engagement thing, he hasn't done one iota of that in the umpteen years he's been your producer.
I just said that verbatim.
I know.
I actually used the word iota. So I know either you weren't listening or you've just decided I didn't like the order of the words Brian used, so I'm going to flip them around a little bit and try to make it sound as if I just thought of that.
I was solidly confirming your observation.
Confirming or plagiarizing?
Yeah,
which were you doing? All right.
Fake news.
It is fake news.
Yeah.
Everything on this
Nothing
show is
happened.
Fake news.
He photoshopped the pictures.
Right.
If you were as good looking as she was, Brian, maybe you'd get some of that, you know.
Ooh.
Listen, but
I might be easier than she is. So maybe we trade it off. Put earmuffs over the children. That's not, there's kids outside on the Allstate Showcase studio.
It's a family show, Brian.
It is a family show. That's why I didn't get graphic. I just said easy. All right, we're going to do this. Then it's going to be news time. Shannon's hanging out. She's got a good engagement story. We'll get to that on the other side of the news. And then, oh, as promised, the hottest political story, which already has the text lines up in arms. Oh, no, get no more political story. Just hang on. It's my show. You figure it out. Unless you're new. We were talking about Cody's engagement. Somebody texted in. They want to know if you're getting married in Rockford, the 10th most dangerous city in the world or in the country. Are you going to get married in Rockford? Do you know yet where you're getting married?
No idea.
No idea. Early stages of planning.
When you proposed to your now wife,
yes,
were you thinking about what you do for the wedding or when or any of that?
No. No. You propose and you'll get that all figured out. I forget how. I mean, I knew in the back of my mind, I knew we'd probably get married in Michigan because that's where her family was. That was all the only thought I had put into it. And then, of course, it's all right. Well, we know we're getting married up there. Then it was let's find a venue and she and her mom, then she and my mom and dad, and because I was on the road all the time, so I really didn't get involved with much of that.
Okay.
I got involved with some of the registering. I don't know if people still do that. Do you register for gifts?
Maybe at some point, but maybe...
Well, obviously not a week into it. You're not... No,
right.
We understand that, but...
Maybe it's a guy thing. I don't know, but I just had not... I mean, I had a couple ideas,
right.
But, you know, everyone starts asking right away, when are you going to get married? When are you going to get married? I'm like, I don't know.
Well, some people get married very quickly after they get engaged for whatever reason. Some people like to plan out. Some women have these dream ceremonies in their head, and they're like, well, I need at least a year and a half to 2 years to get everything together because the venue I want is booked, and I have to have my dress made and all this other garbage that goes along with it.
Yeah. We're not married to a venue, as it were.
Ha, 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 ha.
We're aiming for October or November or...
Of this year.
Maybe even December of this year, yes.
Really?
So 7 to 10 months. She wants to lock it down. I'm a hot commodity.
Is that right? She wants to make sure you don't go back to your old ways?
I think so.
Your old crazy ways and start moving about?
So if we can find a suitable venue and get the invitations and save the dates out, like, in the next couple weeks, then we'll see.
Wow. All right, let's talk to Shannon, because I've got, there's a texter who has a bone to pick with your engagement story that you just regaled us with, but Shannon's been holding on. She wants to share her story. Hi, Shannon.
Hi.
So you've got a good engagement story.
Yeah, so 22 years ago yesterday, my husband proposed to me. And, you know, we had been living together, so it was clear that we were going to get married, and I kept telling him, because I'm a control freak, you need to propose, I need to get this going, you know, I need to do all this planning or whatever. And so he would several times get down on one knee and say, will you marry me?
Yeah.
And I would say, yeah, well, when you have a ring. So, you know, so I would, you know, walk away from you know, the conversation or whatever. So then... we were on our way to a party, and I'm like, okay, we got to get to this party on time. And he got down on one knee and he said, will you marry me? And I said, well, yeah, okay, whatever. When you have a ring. So I started to walk out of the apartment and he wasn't following me. And so I turned back around and he was still down on one knee and he had a ring.
Oh.
And so I was like, oh my God, you know, and of course I said yes and everything. And, you know, that was the only way he really could have done it, because if he would have taken me on a carriage ride or a fancy dinner, I would have known that it would have
been
coming. So, and he also, you know, back in the day before cell phones, he called everybody to tell everybody that he was going to propose. So when we went to the party, when I called my mom, when I called my dad, everyone was like, yeah, we know. it was good for me because everyone else knew but me, and because I'm a control freak, that was
well. See, really, and it's nice that he finally made you relinquish control. Now I'm sure over the last 22 years you've gotten that control firmly back.
Absolutely,
of course. Yeah, I could tell. Well, congratulations, happy anniversary, Shannon, and thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. Now, I got to ask this. Did you, and Roger, this is an old-fashioned notion. Maybe you did it. I know I did. Did you ask for her hand? Did you get permission from her father, her mother, some older sibling? Did you go and say, here are my intentions about your daughter. I would like to, I'd like to ask for her hand in marriage. A very old-school way when women were property, and you had to give, you know, they had a dowry. And second, did you get a dowry?
I did not get a dowry.
You got ripped off.
Yes.
Go ahead. Oh, yet. All right. So there could be a dowry in your future.
I did ask her father for her hand.
Yes.
In December when I saw him. And I only did it because when her sister visited us about a year ago, they both said, oh, my gosh, if you asked, it would be hilarious. I can't imagine what he would say. I want a recording of that conversation. And I didn't record the conversation, but I asked him specifically because they thought the concept was hilarious. And because
and he said yes, obviously.
He just said yes, and he was nice about it. Nothing zany happened. So
no, nothing zany ever happens.
I don't know what they expected, but they thought it was just such a funny idea. So then I told her I did ask, and then she goes, I can't believe you did that.
I know it's old fashioned, but I think it's still one of those. I hope that if my daughter ever gets married, whoever wants to marry her comes and asks me.
Yeah.
I think it's just a sign of respect. I know I asked my wife's mom.
Yeah.
you know.
And I really like her family.
I was going to do whatever I wanted anyway, but, you know, it wouldn't have been like, I'm sure if her father said, well, I think you're a no-good two-bit piece of garbage, and I don't want you anywhere near my daughter. You still would have called the guy at the music box.
Yeah.
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 But it's not. Did you ask for your wife's hand in marriage, Roger?
Nope.
No, you just kidnapped her and held her for 6 years till she finally gave in to your whims and then let her out of the shed.
You know,
everything was hunky dory.
After 3 years, the detainee usually kind of
Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we get it. Yeah,
it worked.
All right.
It worked.
That's good.
No, ours was very unceremoniously, completely opposite of Cody's. We had dated for about a year prior to our wedding. And lived together for maybe the last 5 months.
Uh-huh.
And just while we were living together, we were sitting in a room together.
Oh, this is when you asked her while you were in the bathroom, right?
Yeah.
You were sitting on the throne?
No. I was kind of sitting in the bathtub, sans water. I was fully dressed.
Were you drunk?
Probably.
Who sits in the bathtub sans water, fully dressed?
She was in there. Doing stuff, and so I said, "Hey,
wow.
Want to get married?" And
kind of weird. Hippie,
she said, "Thought
hippie,
about it."
Dippy thing. Were you going through?
Yeah. Well, we were kind of hippy dippy.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
So, how long did she think about it? Another year.
A couple seconds.
Oh, and then
couple seconds. She said, "Sure, why not?"
All right.
Did you get on a knee, either of you?
No, he was. Did I? Yeah, I think I did. My wife pulled up in front of the. She was coming over, and I knew this was happening, so I had the ring, and she kind of knew. That it was coming at one point, because we had discussed, like, what kind of ring she wanted and things like that. And this was before the day, one, I was I didn't have a ton of dough. And two, everybody didn't have computers then. This was 26 years ago, because we'll be married 25 years next month. So my dad was a principal, and I had him print out on his, like, dot matrix printer this big banner for me. So I had that hanging from the balcony of the apartment. And it was one of these apartment buildings where you pulled up. There's just three-story buildings, and you pulled up and parked right outside your apartment. So, you know, I was on the second floor, so she pulled up, there it was. And then she came in, and I had a big thing of roses and the ring all kind of sitting. So as soon as you opened the door, there it was. And she pulled up, and so my wife is always late. Always. She was always late when we were dating. She's always late now. Except for one day, she decided to be on time, the day I was going to ask her to marry me.
Really?
Yes. Not only was she on time, she was early. So I'm getting everything set, and I have the patio door, the sliding glass door open, and I hear a radio, and then I hear the door slam, and I was just about to go out and hang the banner. And she's down there, and I'm like, ah! So I yell from the balcony, get back in your car, you got to come back in 5 minutes. She's like, what? So we're screaming up. This is like West Side Story or Streetcar Named Desire. She's standing down in the parking lot of the building, and I'm screaming down her, go, you got to go. Come back in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you got to go. What? Just get in the car. So she left, and now I quickly hang up the banner, and everything else is done.
Did you think she was going to come back?
I figured she'd come back. Wouldn't you come back for this? Come on.
What?
Come on.
Yes.
Come on. You got this on the hook, you're coming back. Now she wishes she had come back. But she came back, and then when she pulls up, now she sees it. Now she starts crying because she realizes that I wasn't just, like, I didn't have somebody else stashed in the apartment, which I'm sure as she left, she's thinking, why can't I come up? What the hell's going on up there? There's some sort of shenanigans happening up in apartment 203.
Mm.
Yet there were no shenanigans. The only shenanigans were me trying to get everything done and figuring I had plenty of time. No, not this day. Oh, she was so punctual.
So we had similar engagement stories, really, with the banner, basically.
Right, which leads us to another similarity, sort of. Somebody has to take issue with your story. Hey, Cody. Hold on. That was wrong. Oh, Brian. I heard Cody announce his engagement on the air with Craig, and he is conveniently leaving out, quote, the rest of the story, end quote. Like the part where he left her at the Taco Bell later that evening. No cherry picking of the best engagement story ever, please. So you left your now fiance at a Taco Bell?
So I'm glad this was brought up, because this is indirectly your fault.
How's it my fault? I wasn't even there.
I planned this engagement weeks before, and at that time, you had discussed the possibility of hosting a Mardi Gras party that night.
Correct.
Now,
Which you had told me when I broached this, when I said I might have some people over for Mardi Gras. You said, oh, well, that's Casey's birthday, so we'll probably have plans.
That was, I don't remember
that
where.
That was the last time we talked about it.
I don't, oh, so you didn't
the
have
the first
it
and last time. No, it wasn't. No, yes.
So you,
I canceled an entire social gathering because you couldn't be there. Because if you can't be at my house, why would I ever invite anyone else over to the house?
I am the
that
party.
Would be silly. You are a party unto yourself.
You were going to have it. And so my thought was I'll propose to her Friday afternoon.
Sure.
Then Friday night, I'll bring her over to Brian's. She'll get to show it off to a lot of
great
people. Then Saturday, we had a party planned at my house where the rest of her friends would see. So she'd get to show it off all weekend. Well, when you canceled that, I thought to myself, all right, well, okay, I got to figure out something to do for Friday night. Then WGN calls me up and says, can you host 2 to 5 a.m. Friday night into Saturday morning?
Oops.
And I go, oh, now I have to plan some kind of social gathering that will allow me to leave before midnight and be at WGN to prepare for the show.
And that, of course, leads to Taco Bell.
So,
how does that lead to Taco Bell?
So I actually put together, and I also didn't want to leave her by herself. I didn't want to say, okay, bye, and then it's 8 p.m. on her birthday, and she's by herself in our apartment, you know, with a ring and no one around.
And nowhere to celebrate with.
So this actually was a nice thing, I think. We got 8 of our closest friends, and we all met up at the Violet Hour in Wicker Park, the speakeasy, really nice drinks. And we all had some cocktails, and it was really nice. And around 11:30, we were all done, and we exited, and a couple of my friends said, we're going to go to Emporium, the arcade bar, because a friend's band is playing. She said, oh, I'll go with. I said, I need food. What's across the street from Emporium? The Taco Bell in Wicker Park.
Ah.
So we all went to the Taco Bell, and yes, I did technically leave my girlfriend at
but
a Taco Bell.
But not alone.
But
you didn't leave her sitting at a booth with a chalupa, just wishing that her man was still with her. You left her with friends.
No, so in context, it's more excusable. Out of context, it's just hilarious. And our first Valentine's Day, we spent by walking to Taco Bell and having Taco Bell breakfast.
Beautiful.
So I think it's an appropriate circular. It's kind of a return to our roots, our Taco Bell romantic history, in a way.
I think it's great.
Thanks.
Terrific. That is wonderful. No, it's very good. So, well, congratulations to you. You know, I wish you nothing but the best, and wish your fiance nothing but the best. She's going to need it. You know, it's going to be
right.
Very nice. It's going to be very nice. All right, as promised, we're going to talk about what I think could be the biggest political story ever. What the heck is going on with our president? I'll tell you about it. Get your opinions on it. Because, listen, if you don't talk about something political, you're not on the radio. So we're going to talk about something political. But if you've listened to this program before, you kind of can figure out may not be what you think it is. All right, we'll do it after this, WGN. All right, I promised you what I believe to be the biggest political story of the last few months. It's been a concern of mine and some other people in the so-called mainstream media since Donald Trump was inaugurated as 45th president of these United States. It's not the potential ties with Russia. It's not his cabinet nominations. It's not all the executive orders. It's none of that. It is, of course, the handshake. What the hell's going on with this guy's handshake? When I was a young man, I remember listening to my dad make comments about other people. And he said one way that you judge a man is by his handshake. Now, there was a big story in one of the fake news outlets that, of course, breaks down the presidential handshake. The 5 handshake rules that President Trump is breaking every time. Now, if you're not familiar with the signature Donald Trump presidential handshake, it goes something like this. First, there's a long extension of the arm. Second, an iron strong grip. Third, a jarring yank of the person toward him. We've seen this how many times? When he meets foreign leaders or even when he's introducing his own cabinet nominees. So a jarring yank of the person toward him as if he were pole starting a lawnmower. And finally, there's the awkwardly long and animated shake. For example, when the president met with the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe earlier this month, he proceeded to shake his hand for 19 seconds. At that point, you're pretty much engaged, right? If you shake somebody's hand for 19 seconds, you're going steady. You need to get pinned, as they say in the fraternity and sorority
world. That's second base.
Yeah, I think so. He gripped and pat. He was gripping and patting as the Chinese leader clearly struggled to escape. So he also did his Trump shake on the Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. I remember seeing that, and he does. He yanks you toward him, and then he just he won't let go, like he's a puppy humping your leg. And again, I know everybody else is focused on the quote unquote big issues. But I like to bring it down because I do believe a handshake is the microcosm of a man's character and a woman's character. Because now, you know, now women shake hands too. And I believe a woman should have a firm handshake as well. Somebody gives me the cold fish, the clammy shake. Forget about it.
Hashtag feminism.
Hashtag feminism is correct.
Same standards.
That's right. Psychologists have argued that Trump's handshake is nothing short of psychological warfare. That's right, psychological warfare for a handshake. It's an opening salvo meant to put others at a disadvantage. Well, sure, if you yank somebody towards you, they're kind of like, they're off balance, and then you're giving them the, yeah, and I'm going to make that sound because people can't see me shake. So when you hear that sound, the, yeah, just picture me holding your hand in both hands and shaking maniacally.
Picture Igor.
Yes, yes, except I don't have a hump.
Well, yeah.
I have pretty good posture. He knows, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, because when I think of psychologists and acts of warfare, I think to myself, I got to get a quote from a paper in Australia. He knows that images of these greetings will be shown around the world and that they will make it look as if he is the man in charge. But some world leaders are onto his little game. They will battle the Trump shake. You saw that with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. He jumped out of the limo and ran up to the president as quickly as he could to cut off that long arm and yank move. So he cut out the first two steps of the handshake, and then he did a quick shake and pulled his hand away. So he had a regular, you know, quote-unquote normal man handshake. So anyway, here are the rules for a good handshake that the president seems to be defying. Always stand up. So you don't shake somebody's hand, they don't walk up to you, you don't stay seated, you stand up. You always get the angle right. Your palm should face inward, not downward or upward. Always face inward. Straight on handshake. Keep your left hand at your side. So don't bring it up, don't clasp, don't bring it up, no slap it on the arm, none of that craziness. Adjust the pressure. A handshake should be firm, but not too firm. It's a compromise, and obviously the strength you use will vary depending on the person you are greeting. We've all had that guy who wants to show you that he's been doing one of those hand exerciser deals, and he's going to squeeze your hand. And you know what I usually do then? Kick him right in the nards. That's what I do. And don't overstay your welcome. So only shake for an appropriate amount of time. All right, we're going to get all Irish up in here on the other side of the news with our friends from the Irish American Heritage Center and the Dirty Wellies. We'll do that after the news, which we'll do after this on WGN. St. Patrick's Day is right around the corner, a month of celebrating all things Irish. They do it all year at the Irish American Heritage Center, but March is a huge, huge month for them. A lot of events going on every day. Next Saturday, March 11th, is the first St. Patrick's Day celebration. It is St. Patrick's Festival, and our good friend from the Irish American Heritage Center, Kathy O'Neill, is here, along with members of the band The Dirty Wellies, which we'll be hearing from in a little bit. Welcome. Happy St. Patrick's Day early. It is. I'm already excited.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you, as I know you are Irish as well.
Yes. So, about how many visitors just this month at the Irish American Heritage Center?
We estimate about 10,000 people through the building throughout the month of March.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, this is because we've got, obviously, the big St. Pat's Festival coming up Saturday. And then on March 17th, there's St. Patrick's Day festivities as well. So those are going to be big, big draws. But you've got stuff going on all month.
We do. We have a really nice fish fry every Friday night. That's it's really fun because we get step dancers, pipers. It's a really great family event. And also we have concerts throughout the month. It's just kind of a really good, if you come up during March, it's a really good way to see what we do all year long.
And it is, the fish fry is, as you said, wonderful and a lot of fun, and it's packed.
Packed.
So try to get there early.
Yes.
Because it's unbelievable how many people show up. And, well, the fish is really good, too.
That's the thing.
It's not, people go, oh, fried fish. It's not greasy.
No, it's not like when we were growing up and having Mrs. Paul's.
No, and you're just praying that there's a lot of napkins to soak up the goo. You don't need any of that. It's great. Okay, so now, people might think, hey, St. Patrick's Day is on the 17th, obviously. That's a Friday. That should be the big day. But no, the Irish American Heritage Center, always smart, and ties in their St. Pat's Fest with the Chicago Parade. And that's what's happening again on Saturday.
We do. Correct? We march in the parade, and we have an award-winning float. We are slot number 54 this year.
I saw
and
pictures
then,
of the float.
Yeah,
it looks good.
Yeah, they're working on it today. Yeah, it's in our parking lot right now.
So people can drive by and get a preview?
As long as they don't take off with it.
Yes, yeah. Don't pull up a truck.
No.
Don't jump on it. Don't pretend you're the queen of the parade.
Exactly. But no, it's a lot of people love to come up to our place after that because you don't have to leave the building.
Right.
We have programs and exhibits on all four floors. So not only do we have music and dance and food and drink, we also have an art exhibit. We have our museum open. You can come and learn about your genealogy.
Yeah.
You can come and take a quick Irish language lesson.
It's the whole place, and I know you've been with us for years on the shows, and I know you've been on other shows here. So you always think, well, people should be familiar with the center, and yet so many people I talk to are like, oh, we didn't even know that was there. It's like, how do you not know? If you're Irish, how do you not know about the Irish American Heritage Center? Because you do so many wonderful things.
We do. We have about 100 programs a year, and it's an 86,000-square-foot building.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's an old City of Chicago building, and we've converted into this just home for Irish culture. We've got a choir, a theater company.
Uh-huh.
We have live music, concerts. We have festivals. We have Irish Fest during the summer, and
yes.
I know you come out in your kilt.
Cody and I competed last year.
I don't think you won, did you?
I didn't. You know what? First of all, I got to complain. I'm going to complain early, so it doesn't seem like I'm a sore loser. I waited long enough. It's been long enough since our defeat that now it doesn't seem like I'm being a petulant child. Speaking of children, I don't think my leg should have to compete against a cute little six-year-old. That doesn't seem fair. A six-year-old's always going to beat me because they have childlike exuberance. And I'm some grizzled old guy who was probably at least a sheet and a half to the wind. That doesn't seem right. And then the man who won, the older gentleman who won, was in some sort of full military regalia. He looked phenomenal, but Cody and I stood no chance against a child. It's like W.C. Field said, you never work with kids or animals. We had a kid, and then the guy was like a kilt animal.
He did. So, he brought out his brave heart.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. This guy, either he is in some sort of unit that is plotting the overthrow of this country with a rabbit, a rabbit sporran, or something, but it was because we were told that there were age brackets. There were no
age
brackets.
You know, we lured you up there. That was it for it.
No, it was fun. I had a ball, and my brother now, who saw me in the competition, is contemplating a kilt purchase. My wife, of course, anytime I wear the kilt, is very excited. So
sure.
I don't feel it was a waste of time.
Well, we definitely.
But I'm a sore loser.
Yeah, you definitely are.
I am. Well, you saw me pout and storm out of
there. I did. I had to buy you a beer.
Right.
But what's nice
then
is
I threw it on the child.
I do like that you come back. You come back every year crying into your beer. And then also you come back as our MC for our Hall of Fame event.
I am very honored about that again. And that's June 10th.
Yeah, this will be your
starting to plan again.
Third year? Yeah. So we're starting planning on that right now. And I understand you bought a tux.
I bought one for last year's festivities. So that's why I was praying I did a good job last year so you'd invite me back so my investment seemed to pay off.
Well,
if I get one more year hosting, I pretty much break even. And then you guys can cut me loose. If you want.
Well, no one else was really available. And I knew you bought
the tux.
Who's
going to take out a Saturday night?
Yeah, and I knew you bought the tux.
Go stand with a bunch of Irishmen.
I felt kind of bad about the kilt thing, so I was like, let's throw him a bone.
Well, listen, I'll take it any way I can get it. I'm not proud. You know that. So I'm very excited. Let's get back to the St. Patrick's Fest, which is, we'll get to St. Patrick's Day later,
mm-hmm.
because these are two separate things, and I don't want people to get confused,
yeah.
because they're going to hear, oh, St. Patrick's Fest, that's going to happen on Friday the 17th. No, that's St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about it later. So on the 11th, this runs from after the parade. So what's it start about?
We open at noon,
noon
to midnight. We used to be 1 p.m., and then we looked and saw people lining up down the block and around the corner.
I'm sure your neighbors were not happy
yes,
about that.
Yes, well, we try and give them some tickets to come
yes.
on out. So they're very nice. Yeah, so we go from noon to midnight, and there's music and dance in 7 or 8 different rooms. So we have step dancing. We have 5 different schools coming out. We have bands. So it's just a really, really great day, especially for families, because a lot of times the people will bring their kids out.
Right.
And they'll bring grandma and grandpa, and then they'll be like, oh, it's time to go home. And then grandma and grandpa.
Take the kids.
Yeah.
That's the smart way to do it. And that's the other key. Even Irish Fest in the summer. But all these events are family friendly at the center because, yeah, people are drinking, they're having a good time. It's part of the culture. But there's so many programs to go. You'll have things specifically for kids.
Yeah, we do have a whole kids room. And then what's nice too is Trinity Irish Dancers are providing dance lessons for the really little kids. So the kids can just come in their socks and learn a few steps. And we found last year that was really cool because you would see like 3 and 4 year olds learning how to dance.
And there's something so cute about watching these kids.
Yes.
When the kids get older, it's very artful and spectacular to watch. But when they're little and just learning, it's like watching any little kid.
Oh,
dance.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
It's really cute. They're all business.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They're very serious.
Very serious. They're as serious as a grown man in a kilt contest. That's how serious
Who's
they are.
Who's crying?
Well, sure. You'll cry after in the bathroom, by the bar with your beer. Anyway, Cody cried a lot. I had to comfort him. It was very sad. You remember. You were there. So we've got that. And then people might say, oh, well, I want to come. Obviously, there's going to be food. There's going to be music. There's going to be dancing. There's also going to be a really cool Irish craft fair. And not just little, you know, oh, look, here's a bottle cap I made.
Yeah, we have about 15 vendors selling everything from CDs to sweaters to artwork and framed photographs. We also have our gift shop that's open, which has just some really beautiful items, and they do really well that day because people just like to stop in and pick
and they're
up
in
something.
The mood.
Yeah,
and something is, and they have food, they have clothing, they have household things, they have
really
gift
beautiful.
Items, everything in there.
And I'd see a lot of people who say they claim they're coming to buy something for a relative, but they're just buying something for themselves, which is nice.
Oh, your relatives are the same size as you? Yes,
all of them.
Oh, they all are exactly the same size. Oh, well, that looks. Tell them it looks good on them. Oh, I will. Thank you. Again, I can't overstate it enough. Now, the other thing people will think of, well, you know, it's St. Patrick's Day. I'm going to have a couple of pints. It's probably not easy to get to. I'm going to have to drive, which could not, again, be further from the truth. The Irish American Heritage Center, very easy by public transportation.
Yeah, we're right off of the Blue Line at Montrose. We're also off of the Lawrence bus. And then when you're there, we have a free shuttle that runs close by. We just tell people to come toward the lot, and if it's full, take the free shuttle that goes back and forth all day long.
Okay, because I'm coming up later. My wife is working. This is very excuses because last year we decided, let's put our money where our mouth is, and it's not a lot of money. It's very little money. So we're members, which is cool, because then you get notice about different concerts and all the different programs that are coming up at the center. And again, there are many, all month, pretty much every day, it looks like there's something going on. There's a big Wearing of the Green Ball tonight.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And there's stories, a series, and music series, and all of this, all surrounding the big St. Patrick's Day parties. But so if people can come up a little later in the day, and then where are the remote lots?
We tell people to drive toward our lot.
Okay.
Two big lots just in case it opens up. But then we have people waving. It's just about 2 or 3 blocks away on Wilson and Lamont at a big pumping station. So they don't even need to know how to get there. Just come toward the lot.
And you guys
and that runs back and forth between 1 p.m. and midnight. And it just keeps going back and forth. So.
That's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, part of this is, and we're going to talk, like I said, this is the St. Patrick's Festival, which is Saturday, March 11th from noon until midnight. At the Irish American Heritage Center, 4626 North Knox Avenue, irish-american.org is the website. One of the big draws to anything at the center is music.
Mm-hmm.
And you have brought a band with you. Who did you bring with you?
I brought the Dirty Wellies. Do you know what a dirty welly? A welly is?
A welly is a boot.
Giant boot.
A big giant rubber boot.
Yes.
That I first became aware of in Memphis.
Oh.
Oddly enough, at the Memphis in May Barbecue Festival. I was down there when my brother lived in Memphis and was graduating, so we went there, and there was a horrible storm, sideways rains, and everybody, because it happens every year, everybody wears wellies. And I had never been exposed to them before, but that's where I first learned about wellies, and so they're the dirty boots, basically.
Yeah. They're a ragtag team of musicians from Chicago and the suburbs, and they play everywhere. They play a lot at the Irish American Heritage Center. So I brought them down to give us some tunes. They're a really great group of, sometimes, tonight there's 3, sometimes there's as many as 6.
Very nice. Well, we'll meet them and hear some great music on the other side of the break. 4626 North Knox Avenue is where the Irish American Heritage Center is. You can get tickets either online. You can call the center at 773-282-7035, extension 10. Or you can just drop by the Irish American Heritage Center and pick up your tickets. It is only $12. Is that correct?
Yes, $12 in advance, $15 at the door. And kids 12 and under are always free.
Right, because you need need them to get in so that they can carry all the beers back to the table. That's why you bring children, and to defeat grown men in their kilts. All right, enough of that. I'm going to stop dwelling on that. We're going to hear from the Dirty Wellies and more with Kathy O'Neill and everybody from the Irish American Heritage Center. On the other side, it's WGN. Kathy O'Neill is here from the Irish American Heritage Center. This Saturday, March 11th, is their big St. Patrick's Fest. Not to be forgotten, there will also be a St. Patrick's Day festivities, which we'll talk about that. One of the bands playing on St. Patrick's Day, and they are a regular at the Irish American Heritage Center, are the Dirty Wellies, which we learned earlier, is, if you did not know, a wellie is a big rubber boot. And speaking for the group, now the band had to decide who was going to speak for them. None of the musicians wanted to be the one who played spokesperson, but Regina Garrity, who plays the accordion, is going to talk to us a little bit. Welcome. Thanks for coming in.
And I'm very happy to be here today, or this evening. And I have Frank here on my right. He's playing the mandolin. He's from outside Dublin originally. And on my left, then I have Jim, who's got ancestors from County Mayo.
Very nice.
And he's going to play the whistle.
And where are you from?
And I'm from County Mayo as well.
Ah, very nice.
Ballyhonus, or outside Knock, for anyone who's listening, and it's from Mayo. And my cousins, actually, they're not here tonight, but they are also from Mayo.
I was going to say, the band has kind of a rotating cast of characters. There's a core group, but sometimes there's three of you, like tonight. Sometimes there's six of you. People come and go. It sounds like a fun way to do things.
Yeah, it started off as a kind of a family, passion for Irish music, and myself and my two cousins, and then we just got to know other people in the area that play music, and we've continued to play Irish music since we moved here about 10 years ago.
Very nice. Well, listen, we'll talk a little more after the news, but let's hear, you guys focus on traditional Irish and Scottish music, so what are we going to hear?
We're going to start off with a couple of jigs. They're well-known jigs, Out in the Ocean and Linton Bachi.
Fantastic. It's the Dirty Wellies on WGN. Very nice. The Dirty Wellies, they will be appearing at the Irish American Heritage Center on St. Patrick's Day proper at 8:30 p.m. in the 5th Province. They are wonderful. Now, we're going to hear more from the band, which tonight is Regina Garrity on accordion, Frank Gleason on mandolin, and Jim Amon. Am I pronouncing that right, Jim? Jim Amon is on the whistle. And these guys travel. Kathy, I got to tell you, these people travel with a bigger entourage than the Rolling Stones.
We
got three traditional Irish musicians, and there's about 48 people behind me.
With
I don't know. If I had known this earlier, I would have started playing a whistle.
You should see their green room requests.
I can only imagine. What's some of the riders for the Dirty Wellies? One, they want some clean wellies, I'm guessing. Just like the Grateful Dead always wanted clean Levi's. So they want clean boots. What else? How many bottles of Jameson for you guys? Five. Oh, Frank finally being honest. Thank you, Frank. Frank, the mandolin player, I was like, yeah, I'm sitting down anyway. I don't care. I'll have a couple drinks. It's fine with me. So we've got them, and they're playing on St. Patrick. And I looked. Are they playing? Did I miss you guys on the 11th or no? You're playing on the 17th,
just on the
17th, I know. On the 17th,
yeah. Very nice. But they also have a lot of other gigs this week and next week.
I can imagine. So where, Regina, where are you playing? Where else are you playing this week?
I know on the 11th we're playing at Chicago Gaelic Park.
Gaelic
Park? Yeah.
Okay.
Oak Forest.
Yes.
And we're playing there from 6 to 10.
Oh, very nice.
We have other, smaller pub gigs.
That's nice. And people can check you out where? What is your website?
DirtyWellies.com.
DirtyWellies.com. That's very good. And on Facebook as well, Dirty Well. Look at Jim, now the whistle player getting involved. He's kind of...
I'm the one who got stuck with the social media.
Oh, you're the social media guru of the Dirty Wellies?
Well, I don't call it a guru. I'm the one who got stuck with it. So.
Well, you're obviously the PR guy. They made you wear the Dirty Wellies shirt.
I guess.
So, no, listen, there's nothing wrong with that. That's fantastic. That's very good. So this is just one of the fine types of music that we will hear as we... all month at the Irish American Heritage Center, which is... how. People might think, oh, it's probably pretty hard to find Irish band. There's a lot of really great Irish music in this city, isn't there, Kathy?
There is. At the Irish American Heritage Center, Gaelic Park, the Old Town School of Folk Music, lot of Chief O'Neill's. It's just, mm-hmm. It's really a really great city for traditional Irish music. I'd say it's one of the top cities in the world.
And I know during Irish Fest, and I'm sure during St. Patrick's Fest too, there's a lot of great traditional music, and then there's a lot of more modern Irish music as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everybody from, like, Gaelic Storm. There's a great band out there called We Banjo 3. Okay. And a lot of these bands are, we're seeing them at different festivals around the country. And also, they always love to come through to Chicago because it's a great city for music. But yeah. We also give them a really warm welcome.
There you go. And we will welcome the Dirty Wellies back after the news. We'll also talk more to Kathy O'Neill from the Irish American Heritage Center. For all the information on St. Patrick's Festival, which is March 11th, and the St. Patrick's Day celebration, which, of course, is on March 17th, go to irish-american.com. You can call for tickets at 773-282-7035, extension 10, or just drop by the office at the Irish American Heritage Center, 4626 North Knox Avenue, and you can get your tickets then. More music and more Irish fun on the other side of the news. It's WGN. The big St. Patrick's Day, the big St. Patrick's Festival, there's two things. That's why I get confused, Kathy, because I'm easily confused. The St. Patrick's Festival is Saturday, March 11th. It runs from noon until midnight. It's got bands in 5-7 different rooms. You've got arts and crafts, food, beverage. You can check your genealogy. You can see the library. You can tour the center, which is an immense, unbelievably great facility that you need to visit. And then, of course, on March 17th, actual St. Patrick's Day, there's a St. Patrick's Day celebration, which will also run from that. Does that start at noon as well?
Noon to midnight.
Noon to midnight. I like on the website it says noon to 11:59 p.m.
It's a website thing.
Yeah, I was like, I wonder why it won't go all the way to midnight.
Because we just have to close at 11:59.
All right,
no.
Perfect. I don't know. Listen, I don't know. Who knows what the aldermen up there are up to? Because the Heritage Center is at 4626 North Knox Avenue, irish-american.org. One of the bands who will be entertaining everybody on St. Patrick's Day, they are the Dirty Wellies, and they are in the studio with us. Regina Garrity is playing the accordion, Frank Gleason is on the mandolin, and Jim Amon is playing the whistle. And I was told now, Regina said to me, hey, Brian, I've got a joke about jigs, and I have never heard a joke about jigs. But please, will you favor us with your jig joke?
Will you promise that you laugh?
Oh yeah, I'll laugh. Why not?
A lot of people ask where the jig came from, and my honest answer is too much drink and not enough bathrooms.
Very nice. So too much drinking, not enough. Boy, I didn't know I was that good a dancer, because I obviously have been jigging for my entire life. How did the band get together? How did the Dirty Wellies form?
Well, as I said, Irish music was a big part of our childhood growing up in Ireland. You play music in school, and so my cousins and I would always play music whenever we were together, and we really kind of missed it then when we moved to the US in 2006, and then started practicing some tunes again, and then practicing in the basement, and we just started playing out in local pubs, and then we met some other fine musicians from the area, and that's how it all kind of started.
Very nice. And How does it work when you have a band and people kind of rotate in and out? Does it make it difficult, or have you guys played together so much that it's just like, oh, Frank's not here tonight, somebody else is here, or somebody else jumps in, we just, you know, we play
it's
whatever.
It's like herding cats.
Yeah, it's a challenge, but it gives us flexibility, which is very important. We all have busy lives.
Sure.
So we love doing this. This is really just a true passion that we all have is Irish music, and it holds us close to our roots.
Can you, for people who are hearing us talk about traditional Irish music, what would you, how would you define that for people who aren't familiar?
Well,
are there certain instruments that are specifically geared toward traditional Irish music other than others?
Well, Irish music encompasses tunes which are played melodies on a variety of different instruments, like the harp, the accordion, banjo, mandolin. You have the whistle, flute, fiddle. It's a big one. And also then it extends to songs in Irish and in English. And the baron, of course, we cannot forget.
No. You got to have somebody keeping that rhythm. Define the difference. What's the difference between a jig and a reel? Is there a difference?
Yes.
Is the reel after I've eaten too much and I can't get to the bathroom, as opposed to the jig where I have drank too much?
It's the time signature, so the beat. Reels are in 4/4 time, and typically jigs are in 6/8 time. So if you have dancers, it's really important they would know which kind of tune you're going to play.
Very nice.
Dancing is a big part of the culture as well.
What are you going to play for us now?
Well, we're going to attempt a reel.
All right, good.
Made behind the bar.
It's the Dirty Wellies. The Dirty Wellies. Very nice. They will be at the Irish American Heritage Center on St. Patrick's Day at 8:30 p.m. in the 5th Province Lounge. On the 11th, they will not be at the Irish American Heritage Center. They'll be at Gaelic Park. So if you want to stay in the south suburbs or the south side and get your Irish on, then you can see the Dirty Wellies. And you guys are playing, you said, later in the evening that night at Gaelic Park?
6 to 10.
6 to 10.
We're actually playing even after St. Patrick's Day, I can't believe it, on the 18th, if we have any wind left.
Oh, where at?
In Brookfield at the Irish Times.
I love the Irish Times. I live not far from there, and I've spent a number of nights there. Now, I've seen a lot of music there in the summertime when it's out on the patio. You guys will be there March 18th. It'll still be cold. Where do they put the music? In the front bar there?
I know they're having a tent set up in the back.
Oh, nice.
They'll probably be out in the tent, yeah.
That's nice. That's a wonderful Irish bar. If you're ever in Brookfield and looking for some authentic, and this is, I'm not getting paid by the Irish Times, but it's a great place.
Martin, I love you forever.
And now, listen, yeah, now that I know you guys are going to be there, it's always a good excuse to run over to Brookfield and have some fun. But, listen, I'm probably going to be so tired from spending the previous 2 weeks at the Irish American Heritage Center that I won't be able to go out. Let's be honest.
No, that's a lie.
I'll be out and about the entire month. Because since I don't have to compete against children or old men in full military regalia, I'll be wearing my kilt pretty much nonstop starting next weekend. It's be prepared. I'm coming up Saturday night in full kilt. And I'm ready to go. I actually, for Christmas, received my ceremonial dagger for my sock. So I'm ready to go. I'm ready to cut somebody. Next time a kid tries to take me out, I'm going right for the Achilles. Drop him.
Brian, it's a family event.
Right.
And,
nice. Family event.
Behave.
I'll behave. As long as I get the proper respect. I'm kidding. I would never cut a kid's Achilles, especially at the center. I'll wait till they're outside, off property. Then you guys aren't liable. That's how it works. So we've talked about all the things that are going on March 11th at the St. Patrick's Festival. We've talked about the things that are happening on St. Patrick's Day itself. But we've glossed over a lot of the other things that happen throughout the week at the center. Now, Thursday nights, you kind of mentioned this. You have music sessions on Thursday nights in the Fifth Province, which is the great bar at the Irish American Heritage Center.
Yeah, it's a beautiful pub, and we've got a fireplace there, and musicians of all levels can come and play a tune.
Really?
So it's really nice to see. And then sometimes some of the teachers will be there.
Okay.
And their students will come out and play concertina or step dance. So it's
that would be really nice.
Yeah, sometimes we have some singers. So it's just a really nice way for people to learn a new tune, but also showcase what they've learned, and it's every level, so anybody can just jump in.
See, you say all levels, and that terrifies me, because I'm thinking, well, if I'm really new, do I want, like, I wouldn't walk up if the Dirty Wellies are there, and they're cranking out one of these reels that they just played, which was phenomenal. I'm not going to jump in and go, hang on, I got let me join in, I think I know what I'm doing.
Well, I understand you're taking Boron lessons.
I'm starting them tomorrow.
And from Mike Austin of the Boyles, who's a really, really great musician and teacher, is also a reporter for the Chicago Tribune.
I didn't know that second part.
Yeah, he's a wine reporter.
Wow.
So I think after a few months, you'll be ready to join in.
All right. Well, I'll come up and watch a couple, like I did when I first started stand-up. I'll come up and watch a few Thursday nights.
Well, we won't heckle you.
And then, then I'll just wait. And then after I lurk for a few months, then I'll, step in. You know, I'm going to come up with my whole big setup and then just start. It's going to be horrifying. So is there a set band? Is there like a resident group that's
usually,
on Thursday nights?
Yeah.
Or is
usually
it just whoever shows
every
up?
Every week there's a different session leader.
Okay.
So it might be Jimmy Keane on the accordion, John Williams, some great Chicago musicians. And it rotates.
Okay.
So they'll lead the session, and then anybody can just come and play a tune. We also get a lot of people who just like to watch the music who don't play, because it's a beautiful pub.
It's a beautiful pub. It's really cozy. You can go in. You can sit. You can either sit at the bar. You can sit down in one of the couches or the comfortable seats around the fireplace. Is that the night that the radio show tapes as well?
Yeah. I'm sorry. There are other radio shows out there.
Well, I'm not on Thursday. I don't care. Was that bad, Cody? Am I going to get a letter from management? Hey, listen.
We do. We have a radio show, The Crack, CRAIC, which means fun.
And it's not about crack.
No. Right. It's our president, Gene Cooney, and Mike Houlihan, and they have a really great show. So they tape the show, and it airs on Saturday nights, but they tape it on Thursday because they both like to go out on Saturday night.
Listen, I've met Gene. I can understand. I understand extremely well. So that's there. You can come and watch that tape and then stay around for the music session. Mm-hmm. And the music starts about what time?
7 to 9. And it goes a little bit later.
Okay.
And then every Friday and Saturday night, we also have live music in the pub.
And if you're thinking, there's no way I can remember all this information, Brian. You're giving me too many things. You got to go to irish-american.org. That's the website. Everything's there. All the events. Go up and see something that you think, well, maybe that's not my thing. Go and try it. Go and try, learn about your genealogy. Go to the library. Go up there. Go up there for the fish fry on Friday night, and then you'll be hooked. And you'll say, all right, I want to come back. I want to come back on March 11th for the big St. Patrick's Festival. I'm going to bring the kids. And the great idea of yours, Kathy, come with the grandparents. And then send the grandparents home with the kids. Because really, kids don't need to be out after, 4:30, 5 o'clock? I don't need to. And even some of the kids back here, teenagers, 6. I'll give them till 6. Then I don't want them around. I want to be able to drink in peace. All right, let's take a quick break. Then we're going to come back. We're going to hear some more from the Dirty Wellies. We're going to remind you once again that the Irish American Heritage Center is at 4626 North Knox Avenue in Chicago, irish-american.org. More music after this, WGN. We are here with the Dirty Wellies, who will be playing at the Irish American Heritage Center on St. Patrick's Day at 8:30. That is part of a huge bill that's happening on actual St. Patrick's Day. which is, of course, Friday, March 17th. You need to get up there. And don't wait, though. Start your St. Patrick's Day celebrations early. After the parade this Saturday, you can go to the Irish American Heritage Center because the St. Patrick's Festival is happening from noon to midnight. Tickets are $12 in advance, $15 at the door. If your child is 12 or under, they get in free. Why not? It's a great day of music, activities, children's activities. It's an entire family event. So go up on Saturday to the Irish American Heritage Center, 4626 North Knox Avenue. All right, let me talk back. Let me talk to the Dirty Wellies a little more, because Jim Amon has been playing a tin whistle, and now he has pulled out some other sort of contraption. It's longer. It looks thicker. It almost looks like a clarinet, but it doesn't have a bell on the end of it. What's the difference between your whistles there, my friend?
This is a low D whistle. It plays one octave lower than the one I was playing earlier.
Okay.
Hence the larger bore and the extreme length of this.
Yes.
This is also very handy, I discovered, for protecting yourself in elevators.
It does have a billy club look
yes,
to it. It does.
Yes.
It looks like a baton.
It does. I was carrying it one day at a music festival. I went back to my hotel, and a couple of rather drunk ladies were getting ready to get on the elevator, and I had this in my hand. And you aren't going to hit us with that, are you? No, I'm
not
going to do that.
Is that a tin whistle really tin? What's it made of?
The original tin whistles, the Clarks, were made of tin. They can be made of tin, aluminum. I have them made from wood and cast aluminum, copper. They can maybe all different kinds of woods.
And what is this made out of?
This one happens to be aluminum.
Okay.
And you notice it's literally, it's two-piece, so I can actually tune it a little bit. I can pull it out and tune it a little bit.
Very nice.
They're made of different materials, and that gives you a different sound.
And Regina's playing the accordion. I'm sure everybody asks you to play some Weird Al Yankovic from time to time. No?
Doesn't it? Play a lot of things.
I'm sure. How does one... Now, an accordion is an instrument that a lot of people don't play. It's still very unique when you see... Even if you see a lot of traditional Irish bands, you'll see somebody playing an accordion, and you don't see it all the time. How did you become attracted to the accordion as your instrument of choice?
Well, it was handed to me.
Oh, all right.
And I was told you need to learn this. Your brother didn't do it. You need to.
We've invested in this instrument. Somebody is playing it.
And basically, yeah.
All right.
So I'm come from one of seven. I think most of us played, except the boys. I don't know. They escaped.
Okay.
Played the instrument, so it was passed down.
Very nice. Well, you played very well. And then Frank Gleason is playing the mandolin. You also play the banjo and guitar in the band. Were you always a string guy?
Yes, for many years, way too many years to make it believable.
Now, the band said that you have the face for radio, so you are going to introduce the next song. I think you're a fine-looking man, and you've got the brogue, so you're aces in my book. So what are you guys going to play for us next?
There was a blind harpist by the name of Turlough O'Carolan who lived in the 17th century, and he would travel around with his harp to the big houses, and he composed a lot of really beautiful tunes. One of them is this one, which we hope to play and hope to do him justice. Yeah. It's called She Beog She Moor.
Dirty Wellies. DirtyWellies.com is their website. You can catch them all over. On the 11th, they will be at Gaelic Park. On the 17th of March, they will be at the Irish American Heritage Center. On the 18th, they'll be at the Irish Times in Brookfield. So you guys are very, very busy. And then a million different other pub gigs. So people can find you just by going to the website, and they can keep updated on you for that. Thank you very much for coming in. You guys sounded great. I know as the band adds more members sometimes, because as we mentioned earlier, people rotated. You do have songs with vocals. And a lot of people will say Irish music comes down to two basic things, really sad and maudlin or crazy drinking songs. And I'm a fan of both. Do you find that to be the case? And when you're doing traditional Irish songs with vocals, what category do they fall into? Or do they cover all the bases?
The songs,
I stumped everybody. Okay.
No,
like, we have no idea what you just
said. We usually alternate a tune and then a song. But some of the group are not with us tonight.
When you do the songs, but do you tend to go...
The Clancy Brothers were brilliant in terms of collecting great old Irish songs and keeping them alive. And a lot of our repertoire, I would say, probably comes from the Clancy Brothers or the Dubliners,
who were a
great group back in the day. I think they're all mostly dead now at this stage.
Why are you smiling when you say that, Frank?
No.
That doesn't seem like happy news. You seem very excited. Did they owe you money?
I thought I was on radio.
You are. And I just told everybody that they were streaming, the video was streaming at WGNradio.com, and everybody panicked a little bit. Regina Garrity was on the accordion, Frank Gleason was on the mandolin, and Jim Amon was playing the whistle. They are the Dirty Wellies. You can see them at the Irish American Heritage Center on March 17th at 8:30. Along with all their others, go to DirtyWellies.com. And then, Kathy, one more. Did we forget anything? Is there anything we've left out of the big March celebrations, especially the St. Patrick's Festival on March 11th and St. Patrick's Day on March 17th? There we go. Yeah, I forgot. I left out turning on your mic.
I like to tell people, come for the pint, stay for the culture.
Yes.
It's just a really, really great way on the 11th and 17th to see what it is we do all year long, which is provide some of the best Irish culture in the United States.
And that's the key thing, and I can't emphasize this enough. It's not just March for a couple days. It's all year, and it's phenomenal. Whether my mom, who's going to be 80 on St. Patrick's Day, she goes up there with her friend. They've been there for other events and for genealogy classes. People love to go there because there's something for everybody.
Yes.
You can be a casual Irishman, or you can be really dedicated, hardcore. It's all right there in one building.
Yes, and we provide some really nice home away from home for a lot of people.
Yeah. It's great. So everybody needs to go to irish-american.org. The center is at 4626 North Knox Avenue, right off the blue line, right off the bus line. There's parking. It's unbelievable. So go there. Get your tickets. $12 in advance, $15 at the door. Kids under 12 are free. It is a family event. So bring the kids. Bring some of your friends who aren't Irish and make them even more envious than they already are. Thank you all again for coming in. Happy St. Patrick's Day. It was an honor meeting you all. Let's do this. Then it's news time on WGN. Hey, Karen Conti is here to answer all of your legal questions at 312-981-7200. It seems like we haven't been together since early 1985. Would that be accurate?
Sounds like it. I think I was wearing I was wearing pads in my shoulders. And
you looked very working girlish. Very not hooker, but like the Melanie Griffith. Yes, the perm.
And a perm.
And I had hair. It was unbelievable back then when we used to do radio with a crystal set. How have you been? Everything good?
Everything's great.
Anything going on in the country?
There's never a dull moment, I'm telling you.
Never a dull moment, and I don't know why, in the last 2 days, I've become fascinated with wiretap laws.
Well, right.
I don't know what it is. There must be something going on that made me think, hey, wiretaps, that sounds interesting. We all know the story, that the president tweeted out accusations that the former president, Obama, had been wiretapping his phones in Trump Tower. Then it comes out, well, maybe it wasn't the phone, maybe it was a server, and there's no real evidence to back up these charges. No one has come up with it, but some of the mainstream media, the fake news that I like to consume, is saying, well, if in fact there was wiretaps, first of all, there's a chain that has to, you know, be followed to get a wiretap put in place. And second, wiretaps are not put in place without some suspicion of wrongdoing, so we don't know if it's a good idea to be bringing this up anyway. So let's just cut to the chase. In order for law enforcement to enact a wiretap, what has to be done?
Well, in the area of intelligence and foreign matters, which is what we're talking about, we're not talking about a regular court. We're not talking about probable cause to search a vehicle or a home for a drug search. This is a different forum. And this is a forum, they call it FISA.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask. I've heard that a lot over the last 2 days, the FISA court.
Intelligence Surveillance Court. So, you know, we have so many great due process rights in this country. So what happens is if the FBI or some national security advisors want to get wiretap or they want to go physically search something, they have to go to this little court. And this court sits all times of day or night because it might be an emergency. And the court will issue a warrant if there's probable cause to believe that there's a target here that has to do with foreign intelligence and that that there's, you know, there's some issue that is urgent. Mm-hmm. And the court issues a warrant in those regards. Now, it's interesting. It's like, who's on the court? People want to know.
Right, because I've heard it described as the secret court.
It's a secret court. Everything they do is secret. They've only denied warrants probably 4 times in all of their 25, or actually longer than that. I think they were formed in 1978 after Watergate in response to some of the things that happened in Watergate, if you can understand.
And, I can. It was tweeted.
Right. And there's no real appeal rights there.
Okay.
So it is secret, and everything that goes on there is secret. But interestingly, the judges are appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Okay.
So he gets to pick whomever he wants, which I think is interesting.
I wonder if how much, obviously, politics comes into play a little bit, but is there the bent that people worry about with any election of a new Supreme Court justice? People on both sides are worried, how will this affect things down the road? Does that come into play with this FISA?
I mean, probably, and we don't even think about it. There's been no spotlight on this. But clearly, we had some issues with the George Bush administration. There were some allegations, and I think it came to more than allegations, that he was doing this kind of wiretapping and this kind of searching without going through to get a warrant.
Okay.
And that was brought to light. And a lot of people said bad George Bush, but that was in the time of 9/11, and people said, well, we've got to do this to protect our security, even though it was probably improper.
Right.
But again, I think it's interesting for us to know that there's an organization, there's a court that you have to get a warrant from in order to do this searching. So interestingly, let's just say Obama wanted this to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, he's usually not the one to do it. It would be the attorney general. It would be Loretta Lynch who would decide, you know, that this is something they need to make application for. So she would sign the thing, and it would go through the court and would either be issued or not. So there's really very low standards. I mean, when it comes to national security, you can imagine this court basically says, if you think there's a problem here and that this involves national security, we're probably, it's probable cause, which doesn't mean guilty. It means maybe, and it doesn't even have to be a target. It has to be someone, maybe a collateral person, who would lend itself to looking at another target in another country.
Well, they're claiming this may have something to do with banks. So they're trying to see if there were connections with Russian banks. So
some of his associates.
Right. So the intelligence community would only have to have a suspicion to the judges seem reasonable and say, listen, we think there's connection between A and B of a foreign power, so we would like to set up some surveillance.
And that's right. And interestingly, in the court, people think of a court process as being fair, but it's sort of like a grand jury. There is no other side. So the government goes in there and says to the judge, here's what we think and here's why we want it, and there's no one on the other side going, I don't think there's probable cause. So you can understand that even though it is a process, it's kind of a rubber stamp, if you will. So,
but the you still need to go through that process, correct?
Yes.
The president just can't pick up the phone and say, all right, Bob, I need you to put a wiretap on this
and
guy.
I'm not going to really get political here, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, Obama just doesn't seem like the kind of aggressive guy that would say, hey, well, let's go. I mean, you can imagine a lot of other people doing that, but he would go through more procedures rather than fewer and get a lot of criticism for that because he's such a careful guy. So the idea that he did this just doesn't make sense, and I don't like the fact that Trump misspelled the word tap.
Well, sure. No, that's.
I'm sorry. I had to say that.
But, you know,
the thumbs. People have trouble on Twitter.
And again,
thumbs are very big.
Not to try to get super political, but it's really interesting. You know, I just find that, let's just say that he had good reason to believe that. Before you start spouting off on Twitter, you know, you really should know what you're talking about. You're calling a former governor, leader of the free world, a sick...
Former president, yeah.
He's sick. He's sad. He's sick. I mean, accusing him of illegal activities, accusing everyone of illegal activities, it's just really rash, you know, without knowing.
Now, and we don't... How do you know, and this may be outside your area of expertise, somebody texted in and I had heard this too, these warrants and these surveillance, if there were any of that stuff is classified, correct?
Yes, it's super secret.
Right, so you don't bring that up. Now, let me ask you this, because we're talking about from a foreign and from a terrorist and a national security standpoint, are those same sort of rules and policies in play? Say the Chicago Police Department wants to set up a wiretap on somebody. Are there the same sort of things? Is there a secret court here in Chicago, or do they just go through the regular court system to get their...
The regular court system,
okay.
And there are judges that are on hand to give these warrants. They do go through some process. There has to be an informant. They have, you know, they don't have to name the informant at all times.
Okay.
But there are issues, and those aren't a secret, because when someone gets indicted, those kinds of things get looked at, because the defendant will almost always make the argument that there was no probable cause to issue the warrant in the first place, so they have to go back and examine, was there really an informant, where was that informant standing, how did he get that information, or did the government just go on a wild goose chase and make all this stuff up? So that's always an issue in a criminal prosecution.
Okay. So, well, it's going to be, it's hard to believe that a sitting president, like you said, would make these allegations if there's nothing to back them up. So far, you know, and we'll figure it out, so far there's not much to back any of these allegations up, and we'll see.
You know,
but I was wondering about the legalities, because a lot of us, like you said, a lot of us are hearing about FISA for the first time.
Right.
This court. We haven't heard about that before.
And the truth of the matter is, and I just want to make sure I'm clear on this, if Obama did want that, for some reason had some idea that Trump was involved or knew something about some foreign problem, probably Russia, that we're talking about, he could have called up Attorney General Lynch, and she could have made application for this warrant. And in almost every single case of the thousands of warrants that are issued over the last 30 years, it probably would have been issued. So there was probably nothing illegal about it, even if it went down like he said.
Yeah. And we don't, and we also don't know if in fact it did go down, and there was, we don't know if it was on servers, we don't know if it was on a phone, we don't know if it was on one specific thing. He made it seem like everything in Trump Tower was somehow being listened to. We don't know any of the details,
and for good reason. And
if
we don't even know that there was a blaming of Trump for this.
Right.
It could be someone was trying to tap into his campaign to get advantage, you know, and but again, taking that stuff personally. I see this constantly from that administration, like we're taking this personally, when maybe it was just done to protect him, maybe.
Well,
you know?
And when...
If it was done. I'm just saying if it was done.
And if this came out, and again, it's all, as you said, if the whole day has been if. But if you hear of something in a security meeting as president, or as any leader, and all of a sudden you take that public, that seems to be putting people in danger, putting information out there, sharing information that for good reason doesn't need to be shared.
Here's how I look at it. If he found out about it through national security, being as by virtue of being president, really bad, okay?
Yes.
If he found out about it by reading some newspaper article,
which is being that's
even worse,
right?
Because you don't even have any basis other than the fake media telling you that Trump is being tapped. So I just find this whole thing very disturbing and real diversionary in nature.
Well, we will figure it out more. Karen Conti is here. Do you have a legal question? Are you being wiretapped? I know I'm always listening in on Cody's conversations. Nothing, video games and blah, blah, blah. Nothing exciting. But you might have a real question. 312-981-7200 is how you get a hold of us. We'll get your questions coming up next, so get them in on WGN. We got a text question. I'm worried about this a little bit. Maybe after I read it, you'll figure out why I'm worried about it. I get half of my ex's pension. If he dies suddenly, will I stop receiving it? Could this be someone planning something? Listen, you know, oh, he just fell down. I don't know what happened. But will, do you stop receiving your ex's pension if they die suddenly?
You know, that's going to really depend on the pension.
Okay.
But my understanding of the law is that there usually has to be under ERISA.
What is ERISA? Sounds like a girl I dated in high school.
ERISA, it's a Employment Retirement Income Security Act. Yes, it basically says that there has to be some sort of survivor's benefit. So generally speaking, there is a survivor's benefit component to that, so it may not be exactly what you were getting before. So if you get divorced from somebody, you enter into we call it a quadro, which is a qualified domestic relations order, and that gets placed on that pension, and so it makes the pension fund send a check to ex-wife and send a check to husband.
Okay.
But in the event he dies, at that point, there's probably, it stops being an order and it starts to be survivor's benefits. Huh. So you would have to check with the fund. What I've seen happen is, let's just say it's a wife and she has really no right to talk to the fund, so it's kind of hard to get that information. And if you're not on friendly terms with your husband who can make that call, it gets a little hairy to do that.
Okay, so you got to maybe make nice with the ex, find out what's going on.
Or sometimes you can get a friendly person over there who might know it.
That's a hard question to ask somebody, wouldn't you think? Hey, listen, if you drop dead, am I going to keep getting paid?
Yeah, I mean, but it's very valid. I think people need to plan for the future, and especially if you've got someone who's elderly or you've got someone who's got medical issues, it's very important to know how long those benefits are going to last, because some of these people are surviving on just that.
Yeah. Well, now, this is a tax question. I'm not sure if you know about this. I recently received lost money from the state. Is there a way to give that money tax-free to my children?
Yeah, that's an issue of estate planning. So the money was yours to begin with, so you're not taxed on that. If you want to give it away as a gift, I mean, there's gift taxes and all that kind of thing. I couldn't possibly tell you what those limits are. You know, if you want to give it to them now as a gift, you want to give it to them in your will as a gift, those are all issues that you would probably have to take up with an estate planning lawyer.
Right. Yeah, once it gets in, because like you said, the tax code and all that stuff, there's way too much. That's why people pay accountants and estate planners all the time.
It is. You hate to say that, but I mean, we're in a big city here and we kind of compartmentalize our knowledge in that, you know, sometimes a divorce will have all kinds of issues of taxes or have all kinds of issues, you know, relating to estate planning. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, sometimes you need a crossover lawyer to come in and help out with that aspect of it.
Any other big legal stories? I know we've all been fascinated with the political stories and the comings and goings of our president, but there's anything else going on legally that we should be made aware of?
You know, the Sessions thing I thought was interesting, but that goes back to the politics, you know, and what is a lie, you know, and perjury and all that kind of thing. And, you know, one of the things that I think that's interesting about that is that, you know, he, as the, you know, the supreme attorney of our country, if we deem that to be a lie, then his bar could try to disbar him. In fact, one of the interesting things, it was Bill Clinton when he lied in the deposition with the Paula Jones case, and it was deemed that he did have an affair with her, and it was deemed to be a lie, and that was what the impeachment was based upon. His bar, the Arkansas bar, disbarred him, and he's still disbarred for lying under oath.
Right.
So interestingly, I've been asked, you know, what would happen if he got disbarred? Well, he couldn't have an attorney general
who's not an attorney. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, again, I don't think anything is going to happen. I don't think the people down in Alabama are going to, you know, look at one of their own and say, I think we're going to voluntarily disbar him.
Yeah.
But I think all of those things are very interesting, because lying under oath is a big deal for anyone. But when you're a lawyer and do it, it's a really, really big deal.
And who decides what is a lie?
Well, for purposes of
let's say Jeff Sessions or Bill Clinton.
Well, is it a statement of fact? Is it false? And was the person sworn under oath before the person made that statement? And did that person intend to lie rather than just make a mistake? So, you know, I don't think in this case it would be super hard to prove, because there were two meetings or so with the Russian diplomats, then he pretty clearly volunteered to say the affirmative statement that there were no such conversations.
Right.
So, you know, I think not many people get prosecuted for perjury in congressional hearings. Sure. It very rarely happens. Normally, people don't get prosecuted for perjury unless you're like Martha Stewart, where you where you anger everybody in the world and they can't get you on anything else, so they're going to get you on the perjury. So, but it's interesting, and I really do think that lawyers need to be extra careful, not less careful.
We've got time for one quick call before the news. 312-981-7200. David is in Cary. Hi, David.
How you doing today?
Good, thanks. What's your question?
I have a common law marriage question. Been together for 33 years, only split up once. I have a 15-year-old daughter. What is it? Am I? She never took my name. Am I still legal for everything?
Oh, you're not married at all, sir. There's no such thing as common law marriage in Illinois.
Okay.
So,
that's what I thought. I didn't know for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you have obligations to your children like you would if you were married. So those issues
absolutely.
Visitation and money and all of those things are all in place. And maybe you had a joint venture on it. If you bought a piece of property during the marriage, you could go to court and maybe get the whole thing divided or sold if you wanted your equity out of the house. But you wouldn't go to divorce court for those financial issues because there are no obligations for spousal support or any of those things when it comes to a, quote, what you call common law marriage.
I want to sleep better tonight, Karen.
Okay. All right. Have a good night, David.
Right. Thanks a lot, dude. So there is.
I put people to sleep all the time. I'm so good at that.
No, I'm awake, Karen. Don't worry. So there's no such, because people throw that term around a lot, common law marriage. There's no such thing.
No.
Because you've been cohabitating for 33 years, and that's it.
There's no obligations at all. And you know, marriage does give people certain protections and avenues to get support and those types of things. And it makes it harder because, like I said, if you buy things together and you have to unwind it, you're going to be going to a regular court and usually not a divorce court. So, you know, it gets a little more difficult.
Yeah, and you always, I always wonder, I don't mean to speak for you, I always wonder after, why did you just... Some people are like, we don't need a piece of paper. And obviously, 33 years, you didn't need the piece of paper, but it would make things easier.
It's always an interesting question. I waited a long time before I got married for the first time. I want to say it was 10 or 11 years. So, you know, and I think it was like when things are going well, people think, why should I rock the boat?
Right.
Some people have a bad view of marriage, and they think that by staying together but not married, they're going to do better.
It's going to be better.
I really don't know. It's it is an interesting question, though.
But it does make things easier legally if... Even if somebody was to die, do you get? I mean, obviously, if you have a will, you can leave your estate to whoever. But are there different rights for spouses than there are for just somebody who lives with somebody?
Yes. If you are a spouse, you're entitled to a portion of the spouse's assets if you're married, and there's all kinds of rules on that. But that's one of the reasons that gay marriage and all that kind of stuff is so important to a lot of people, because you can't get certain Social Security benefits, you can't take under a will, you know, you don't have rights when it comes to medical things. So, you know, it's important to be married if you want those kinds of protections.
Right. 312-981-7200. That's the number. Karen Conti is here until 9 o'clock. She'll be answering your legal questions. Get them in now. But you know, Karen, people probably figured the Blackhawks were playing tonight, and they forgot we were going to be here. So how can they get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
News after this, WGN. We are here handling your legal questions at 312-981-7200. Let's start with a text question that came in a while ago, and you said you've never heard a question like this. It seems for a lot of people who have jobs, it might go. This is from Mike. He works for the phone company. When a driver gets a parking ticket, the company makes the driver pay them. But if the technician feels that he has grounds to appeal, the city law department prevents that because they say the phone company is the owner of the vehicle. Is there any way to compel the employer to challenge the ticket if there are grounds for the driver, the employee, not being guilty?
It's really interesting because, you know, it's almost like they are taking away your due process rights, your rights to argue that they shouldn't be taking your money because you maybe parked appropriately. But, you know, your private employer has a right to take away your constitutional rights. Just the government can't do it. So, you know, I kind of, my head's going back and forth with all these different areas, and I don't know that there's a clear way to do that. The best way to get the answer to that question would be to talk to your, I'm assuming this is, these are union people.
I would imagine.
Working for a union, and the union would probably, in their collective bargaining agreement, would have certain rules that, not wouldn't address this specifically, of course, but would talk about, you know, what their, what your rights are. And maybe there's some language there. As a lawyer, I would look for some language that would apply, maybe, okay, to giving employees or not taking away rights or benefits without due process. And maybe there's something that is provided in that contract that you can argue that that's violative of that collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, it makes sense, because it doesn't seem right. If, you know, we all can argue a parking ticket,
yeah,
if we get one. And just if I'm driving the company car, I should,
well,
be able to drive to.
And I'm wondering the other issue that really wasn't asked, but are you being asked to park in places that you shouldn't park because of your job? And if that's the case, you know, maybe there's a mechanism to, you know, have a special permit where if you're going to park somewhere for an hour to fix something, that you don't get a ticket, because it makes no sense to put employees in a situation where they have to get tickets.
Right. Imagine if you're trying to do phone work here in the loop and trying to park your company truck, where are you going to, you know?
Right.
You can't park in a lot four blocks away and have to keep running back and forth.
Interesting legal question.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
We like interesting legal questions. Let's see if Stanley has one. He's in Wheaton. Hi, Stanley. You're on WGN.
Hey, Brian. How are you tonight?
I'm well, thanks. What's your question for Karen?
Karen, I'm just wondering, being a divorcee and I did not file, my wife filed, If she passes away, am I entitled to any kind of benefit?
Under her employment benefits or Social Security?
Either one.
Okay.
Because I've been told two different stories. So I'm just inquiring on what the actual legality is around that.
Okay. So the first thing you would do is go to your judgment for dissolution, which is what's entered on the day you were divorced. And does it provide that you have are entitled to a portion of her retirement benefits or pension from the time that you were married to her? So you would probably know that by reading it. And if you are, you need to make sure that those rights are preserved, in that you maybe have to issue an order or do something with the employer to make sure the employer knows that you're a surviving spouse that's entitled to money. The other issue is Social Security, and I don't know all the rules about Social Security. They are very helpful if you go on their website or give them a call, but generally speaking, if you're married for 10 years and you get a divorce, I believe you are entitled to a portion of their benefits. How much of that, I can't tell you, but I would definitely go online and give them a call.
All right, well, thank you.
You're
all right,
welcome.
Good luck, Stanley. Thanks. I always see a short question. I think, oh, this will probably be an easy question. And it may not be. From the 713, is there a statute of limitations for medical malpractice?
There is. Generally speaking, the statute of limitations in Illinois, is 2 years from the date of the malpractice. Okay. There's all kinds of other rules, though, about what happens when you don't know that you have a discovery period.
Okay.
So maybe you were injured and they left a sponge in you.
Right.
But you don't find out for 3 years, let's say, and it causes all kinds of problems. Then you have time from the date you discovered it, but there's still a limit on that. And again, I don't know exactly what that might be. There's also some issues if you were malpracticed when you're a minor. Okay. So these birth defects.
Oh, right.
Where there might have been an improper delivery procedure or something, and maybe your child then has issues, mental issues or developmental issues, that you have time from the time that the child becomes a majority.
Okay.
So after age 18, the child would have 2 years from that date to bring the lawsuit. So it's a lot of time when you're a kid.
So there are limits. They just vary from case
to
case.
It's generally 2 years, though. So if you go in and you know that they took off the wrong leg, you've got 2 years from that date to do it. And you don't want to wait to the last minute.
I was going to say, that's what I wanted to bring up, because these cases tend to drag on and on, correct? So you want to get...
You have to file by that 2 years.
Okay.
You don't have to complete anything within the 2 years. But it's a hard and fast rule. There is, if you're 1 hour late, and you miss the courthouse, you're done.
All right.
So, but the thing is that it takes some research to get a case on file because you have to hire, the lawyer has to hire a doctor to take a look at the medical
to
records.
To see if it's a legit
make
case.
There's a termination, fill out an affidavit. So you need some time to get those records. You need some time to get that doctor. So you don't, you, as soon as you think you might have malpractice, you've got to contact an attorney.
All right. Karen Conti's here, 312-981-7200. If you have a legal question, Fred does. He's in Westmont. Hi, Fred.
Hi, Brian. Hi, John.
Hi, Fred.
Hi. I have a question. I can't go into a theater and yell fire in case there be a riot or something. I'm just wondering, how much can Donald Trump say in this highly political charged country we're in right now and kind of get away with it and say, well, there's nothing that he could do. He thought he had his phone tapped and stuff like that. It seems like it shouldn't be that way. It seems like he should be impeached or grounds for impeachment if he keeps on telling false truths. I can't believe it.
I'm hearing quite a bit of that, and without, I'm going to give you my try to non-politicized legal opinion. You know, he has pretty broad range to say what he wants to say. You know, First Amendment, and you know, he's the one who kind of doesn't like the First Amendment, but he can say what he wants, and the government can't tell him not to say certain things. Now, when that becomes something that violates his oath of office, or that becomes a high crime or misdemeanor, okay, or crosses the line, that is where you have the element of impeachment. And people are asking all the time, what has to happen to impeach a president?
Yes.
And I have to say, it all depends on who's in office, who wants to bring him down, and how powerful they are to bring him down. Because if you look at what happened with Clinton, you know, he lied in a deposition about something that happened before he was governor, okay? Mm-hmm. And he lied about an extramarital affair, which is something that I would think that most men probably lie about. But he was under oath, and that's wrong. It's perjury, absolutely. But he was impeached for that. So that was because they wanted to bring him down, and they did. So the question is, what, you know, if he keeps doing these types of things and people are getting angry at it, I don't think that's a misdemeanor. But it could be some sort of violation of his oath of office. You know, if you put all these things together, they're going to use a terrible word, they're going to trump it up on him. You know, if they get tired of him, they'll find a way to call that a high crime or misdemeanor. And if they want to impeach him and they have the number of votes, they're going to do it.
All right, Glenn, hope that answers your question.
But that's a great question. I hear that all the time. At what point does it rise to the level of something that's actionable?
Let me ask you about that phrase you used twice, and we've all heard it many times, high crimes and misdemeanors. That pretty much covers everything, right?
Kind of does.
It's anything
jaywalking
from jaywalking to capital murder.
Yeah,
it's everything in between. Treason to littering.
Yes.
It's the whole paint with the big brush.
It's exactly right.
All right. We've got some callers holding on. We're going to take a quick break. More with Karen Conti, 312-981-7200. If you have a question, get them in quickly because, of course, we leave at 9 o'clock, whether we got to your question or not. So maybe you shouldn't wait so long next time. I know you didn't remember we were here, but we're back. All right. Let's do this. Then. But people, now I chastise people. Now I feel bad. So how can they call you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, more with Karen Intimate, WGN. Another what I think will be, fingers crossed, a simple text question before we get to the calls. Do credit card debts of a deceased person have to be paid by the estate?
Yes, they do. Right. I tell everyone, it's like a barrel. When you die, you put all your debts in there, you put all your assets in there, and the person who's in charge, the trustee or the executor, has to pay all the debts first, all of those debts, and then whatever's left over goes to the heirs.
All right, let's get to the phones, and we'll start with Glenn in Norridge. Hi, Glenn.
How you doing?
We're well, thanks. What's your question?
Real quick, my dad, when he passed away, before he passed away, he put his property up in Wisconsin in the four boys' names. It's been through a legal battle. Two of the brothers are not paying their taxes. Me and my other brother had to pay the taxes. Can we sue them down here in Chicago because they all live in Illinois, or do we have to go up into Wisconsin to sue them for their share of the tax?
You, normally speaking, when something revolves around real estate, you have to sue where the property is. Otherwise, it's you get to sue where the defendants reside. So, you know, you could try to sue here in Illinois, but I think you're probably better off just suing up there because that's probably the right jurisdiction. And the other issue is, you know, in these kinds of cases, if they're not paying their share of the property taxes, so you sue them and get a judgment, then the next year when they don't pay it, what are you going to do? So you might want to move to what they call a partition, which is to divide the interest so that you either buy them out at some point or, you know, you sell the property and maybe you guys buy it up, because keeping people who are not paying for property taxes and upkeep who co-own the property, it's just very, you're going to be doing it over and over again, right?
Correct.
So you can force a sale, and if you're going to do that, you should do it up in Wisconsin in the county where the property is.
Well, see, me and my brother, because it was my dad's, and, you know, we loved the property, and they got into it, and they told my dad, you know, they wanted to be a part of it, but as soon as he passed away, oh, let's sell it or let's rent it, let's, you know. So they lied to my dad to basically get involved in it, and now we're
this is it. Yeah, this is real common because, you know, people, parents have really good intentions.
Yeah.
They want to leave it to their four kids who are all
sure.
going to be like, well, the wives get involved and we want the property on this weekend and now we're not going to pay taxes because you get it on 4th of July, and it happens all the time. And the best thing to do is to try to buy them out. So you might have to force a sale. Again, that means doesn't mean you have to sell it to somebody else, but you guys, the other brothers, can get together whatever equity is in there and divide it by four and pay these people off.
Well, good luck, Glenn.
Good luck.
Hope that works out for you. Sorry. Well, let's see. We'll go to Kay in Freeport. Hi, Kay.
Hi.
And what's your question for Karen, Kay?
Okay, my husband died last year, and we got in life insurance. And I was just wondering, do we have to claim that on the 2016 taxes?
No. Insurance money, life insurance money, comes tax-free to the beneficiary.
Oh.
Okay.
Yes, that's the beautiful thing about life insurance. It doesn't have to go through probate. It doesn't have to go through a trust. It can, whoever the beneficiary is, the money gets paid to that person.
Okay, I also had another question. The property is still in his name. Can I keep it that way for a while, or do I have a certain time to change it?
You know, you'd probably want to talk to your estate planning lawyer, your probate lawyer. I don't know if it's going through probate. There's no harm, really, in having that property in his name, other than when you want to do something with it, okay? Because it's going to keep coming in his name, and if you ever want to sell it or something were to happen to you, it would cause complications. So best thing to do is to get a real estate lawyer, and basically what you're going to do is, as the whoever the executor is of the estate, if that's you, you would quit claim, quit claim. It's not quick claim. It's quit claim. Quit claim the house from him to you. As the beneficiary, as the heir. So then it just, and then it has to be recorded in the county, and then it's clean, and then it's done. So I wouldn't wait on it. There's no specific time to do it, but there's going to be a point in time where you are going to need it in your name.
Yeah, well, it's going to change to my son in near time, so, you know.
I see. So you don't, you want to do it, don't want to do it twice. Got it.
Right, right, right. So.
All right, Kay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hope that helps. Let's see. We got time to talk to Gary. He's in Chicago. Hi, Gary.
Hello. Karen,
yes.
I'm wondering about if a overcharge on water bills by a municipality, and you try to work it out with them, but they continually overcharge, and it's probably going on throughout the entire municipality. And they got you because they say, we're going to shut your water off if you don't pay the bill, which is extraordinary. Now, is there a lawyer or a certain lawyers that handle stuff like this, either class action or individual against municipalities for something like this?
Yeah, you're going to have a real hard time finding someone to do that without paying them by the hour. You know, class actions are very expensive to bring, and the lawyers who do them want to make sure they have a case, want to make sure there's enough people, want to make sure, you know, and the municipalities are difficult to sue in some regards because you have to prove more than you normally do with an average company. So I really couldn't even give you a reference to somebody who would do this because it just... I mean, how much money is involved? How much do you think they're overcharging you every month?
Well, at least double, and I've been here for 10 years.
So how many dollars?
It's hard to say because every month is different.
Okay.
I mean, I have bills of $200, and then I have bills of $60, $80.
Okay.
So if you average it out, let's say even if you average it out at $120 per month, and you got and they're double charging you, that's $60 a month for 10 years.
And so the problem is not, you know, you could be right. They could be overcharging you, but you have to find that out. And really, lawyers aren't going to take the case without knowing that there is actual double charging. I mean, because you feel like it and because it sounds like it and sounds excessive doesn't mean it's actually happening. So the lawyer would have to do a lot of investigation before filing a suit to get that information in order to file the suit. So it's from a practical standpoint, that's probably going to be difficult.
Sorry, Gary. And we've got time for one more question. Elizabeth is in Chicago. Hi, Elizabeth. Real quick, what's your question for Karen?
Yeah, my question real quick is that what do you do if your boss stole intellectual property from your company? You report that to your company, and your boss gets terminated. But then your boss turns around and takes that intellectual property, posts it on the Internet on his own website that he made, and claims that that's his work from his consulting firm. And then you, as the employee, are the one who actually did the work. Is there anything that you could do?
There's a lot of stuff in that flying around in that question, but generally speaking, if you create intellectual property while you're an employee, it belongs to the company. It doesn't belong to you. Okay?
Right.
Now, do you have a right of attribution, meaning do you have a right for someone not to claim that it's his when it's yours? Maybe, but really the person, the entity who's wronged here is probably not you. It's probably the company.
Right.
So you would have to, whatever rights you have, I mean, it probably angers you to see that he's passing off your work as his, you know,
right.
Sounds like a bad guy, but it's probably not your right to sue him or your right to make that claim.
Okay.
All right.
So work through the employer.
Work through the employer, and, you know, they should be enforcing that because they really need to do that. I mean, you know, you don't want employees to think they can go out on their own and then start, you know, using the intellectual property that was created during the course of the employment.
That's pretty shut open and
closed.
Absolutely.
I have reported it to the company. They know that he has it on this external website, and they haven't taken action at this time, and so... Then I wondered from there if there was anything I could do, or maybe I should consult an attorney.
Well,
you know.
but it's not, like I said, it's not really your right.
Right,
because it belongs to it's sort of like, you know, just think
so
of it.
So if the company's too lazy or doesn't care, then unfortunately for Elizabeth, there's
you
nothing.
You don't have a private right to tell them to cease and desist because it's not yours to begin with.
I see. Yeah.
No, I get it. It's
It's just a frustrating situation.
No, sounds like it. But it's a good question for everyone to know, Brian. When you're working at your job.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Elizabeth. When you're getting paid, anything you create, you know, whether it's a written work product or an invention, you know, heard these stories where people create inventions during the course of their employment and they think they can go out and copyright or whatever or patent it. And you can't do it because you're paid.
Right.
It's called work for hire.
All right. Well, listen, so that if I come up with some brilliant thing while I'm on the air.
I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, you may be wrong. A lot of things here could be. Yeah. I'm not going to get into them now.
That was
maybe
mean.
That was mean. I don't know where that came from.
I think I'm hungry.
Well, listen, this is like a bad Snickers commercial turning into Danny Trejo over there. I don't understand it.
I take that back.
Listen, all right. Well, listen, I'm letting you go anyway. You get out of here. But I will tell people that they should get a hold of you. Hopefully you treat your clients better than you treat your co-hosts. But
that,
you know, whatever. How do people get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
And you'll be on with Steve Cochran later this week?
6:40 in the morning on Wednesday.
Wednesday at 6:40. All right. Listen, we're back next week.
People
will remember. They'll be shouting in the streets. So you have 7 days to come up with some more insults. And I can't wait for you to uncork them next week. Let's do this. Then we'll say goodbye. It's WGN. All right. That's it for us. Rick Pearson comes your way on the other side of the news. He's got a wonderful program, so listen to that. This is Chicago. Hey, guess what, Cody? We're going to be back next Sunday. That's right. 2 weeks in a row. Can you believe it? All right. We got to go. Thanks, Roger. We barely got to talk.
That's all right.
Listen, we'll talk again.
Yeah, you're back next week.
Next week. We'll just talk. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago at WGNradio.com. The news is sponsored by Lindemann Chimney Company. 9 o'clock, Roger Badish.